the translation. Yet, we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you. When we think of your great austerities in perfect discipline, although your good self is so powerful in the matter of creation. So Prabhupada gives us the purport. Following the footsteps of Sri Narada Muni, one should not blindly accept his spiritual master as God himself. A spiritual master is duly respected on par with God, but a spiritual master claiming to be God himself should at once be rejected. Narada Muni accepted Brahma as the supreme due to Lord Brahma's wonderful acts in creation, but doubts arose in him when he saw that Lord Brahma also worshipped some superior authority. The supreme is supreme, and he has no worshipable superior. The ahangra hopasita, or one who worships himself with the idea of becoming God himself, is misleading. But the intelligent disciple can at once detect that the Supreme God does not need to worship anyone, including himself, in order to become God. Ahangrahopasana may be one of the processes for transcendental realizations, but the ahangrahopasita can never be God himself. No one becomes God by undergoing a process of transcendental realization. Narada Muni thought of Brahmaji as the Supreme Person, but when he saw Brahmaji engaged in the process of transcendental realization, doubts arose in him. So he wanted to be clearly informed. Srila Prabhupada ki. Beautiful verse. Beautiful translation. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjanam chalakayam chakshur militan yenam tasmae shri gurave namaha vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada, Shri Vasaji Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Once again with your heart. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here we are in a beautiful spot of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because every spot of the Srimad Bhagavatam is indeed very beautiful. Every syllable is a complete transcendental path to self-realization. Yesterday we had a beautiful class by Dayananda Swami where he made us reveal the whole chapter from chapter 1 to this point. And he was bringing in some very important points. He elaborated very deeply on those 4 verses which Lord Brahma received directly from Krishna. And from those 4 verses, he created the whole creation, the whole universe, material creation. And he also brought a phrase from Shakespeare, which I found very charming. You remember that? Anybody remembers from yesterday? That's, That's what he said. A rose is a rose, no matter what you call it. And it was an interesting phrase because he was bringing the element that the world is temporary, but the ingredients are eternal. He was bringing with this sentence the idea that every form in the material world will eventually decay, but there is a substance which remains eternal. And here, in this verse, it is being described how Narada Muni, who is the example of a disciple, Narada Muni had some incident in his spiritual life, as usual. It always happens at one point or another in our life. But he rose by serving Brahmans. He was able to elevate himself. And here he is in front of his spiritual master, Brahmaji. And he's asking him a genuine doubt. And what is the doubt? I'm under the impression that you're God, but I cannot understand why God needs to make austerities to become God. And that's a very interesting passage if you meditate. Because anyone who is not God has to worship someone superior. But the contradiction is, everybody thinks that we are God. And that's why in today's world, in the impersonal dimension of Kali Yuga, where everything is impersonal, you don't speak with anybody now, you speak to a machine. Places like airports, you don't talk to people, you talk to machines. At school, everybody is the same. They're in one class. If you're more intelligent, you have to stop your intelligence and, you know, you have to adjust because it's impersonal. It's supposed to be one system for everyone. And like this, everybody's trying to understand how I can enjoy the world without the Supreme Person, Krishna. So Narada Muni is making this question, and that's his duty. What is the duty of a disciple? There are two. All bhakti shastra, intelligence, sages and munis. What are the two duties of a disciple? See, a sincere devotee who is practicing. Yes, these are the two duties of a disciple, which is to render service and inquire from his spiritual master. And why render service? Why does a disciple render service to his spiritual master? Exactly. Like a small child. When the small child does something special for the father, the heart of the father melts. We have an example with Krishna. When Krishna brings the shoes of Nanda Baba in his head as a small boy, and Nanda Baba immediately is overjoyed. And we have so many examples, all of you have experienced, when someone does something for you, immediately you feel like reciprocating, isn't it? It's just an immediate reaction. So that's why you render service. And why does a disciple inquire? To know the absolute truth. To be happy. To achieve the final goal of life. Yes, it's only with the benediction of a spiritual master that we can enter in realms which are beyond the realms of the material existence. With our intelligence, our senses, we cannot go beyond of that nature which is beyond. So it's such an obvious reality. We have a mind and senses which cannot cross the realms of the material existence. So we need someone who has gone beyond that to give us that blessing. Now, he had a doubt. What is the difference between a doubt and a misgiving? Are you aware of the word misgiving? The term misgiving, everybody's aware? Yes?
It's not used very much.
It's not very much used, right? Okay. A misgiving is when you have a certain concept of life which has become an intrinsic nature in your heart. That you say, this is what it is. Yes? A doubt leads to clarification. A misgiving leads to convincing. I want to convince you because I can see and you cannot. And a doubt opens for clarification. So Narada Muni wants a clarification. He has a doubt. And what is the doubt? If Brahma is God. Now it's interesting when we analyze this point, because when we see our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, he had a doubt. Had a big doubt. He was in India, and the British Empire was still there, and he could not see how they would be able to express the Vedic culture within the British Empire mindset. He could not understand how we're going to be able to show our culture with the British Empire mindset. He had a doubt. So he approached his spiritual master, not voluntarily. A friend of his invited him to this place in Calcutta, which has been renovated, and it's the meeting place of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. It's a beautiful, magical place. I was there last month. They inaugurated, they renovated it, and this place, Srila Prabhupada received one instruction. And what was that instruction? Print the books came later, he received one instruction. You're a very young man, why don't you preach this message to the Western world, to the first meeting of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. And this house was lost, and there's a whole adventure how the devotees were able to get it again. And so you have to ever go to Mayapur, stop in Calcutta, and go to this place. The meeting place of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. It carries a great potency. That's where the movement started. So Prabhupada had this doubt, and he launched the doubt. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, how will we be able to preach the cult of bhakti if the British Empire is here? And what was the answer? Something like that. He said, the message is too urgent. We cannot wait. If you remove the British autocrat, you have an Indian autocrat, but it will remain the same. So you should go and preach anyway. And he reveals, I was happy to be defeated. Because that was not a misgiving, it was a genuine doubt. And Prabhupada in that time, he wanted to propagate what Gandhi was saying. He wanted to free India because he had experienced in his childhood a famine which was fabricated due to war interest. Just like now we have some tension in the world, different countries disputing territory, so there is instability. We are aware of that, and the Mana was very proactive in helping those devotees who were suffering. So they're very grateful to the Bhaktivedanta Mana for all the efforts that it's been done there. But Srila Prabhupada had experience, he recalls, when he was in Calcutta, married, a famine which was fabricated because Japan and Britain were in conflicting interest regions over India. So the solution was that they would destroy the ships with rice, they would sink the ships with rice so the Japanese people would not have access to that rice. So he understood very deeply that autonomy was very important in his livelihood. And we're going to see that how that reflects in his farm community movement. And I'm going to speak a little bit about this because usually that's a topic which I like to bring, and we'll also discuss on Sunday this point. But Srila Prabhupada could see that under a tyranny, you are subject to those laws. So he wanted us to have our own food, our own milk, our own cloth, so we could independently from outside help continue our preaching movement. So that instruction was right at the back of his mind. But when he was defeated, he did not argue with the spiritual master. Rather, he adjusted himself, readied himself, and came to the West to give that mission. The classes finish at 8:15?
8:30.
Okay, so we still have some little time. Okay. He had that in mind, that he wanted a place for his disciples to practice bhakti free from the pangs of Kali Yuga, where you have to work so hard just to be standing and alive. If you just analyze 60 years back, in the 60s, a gentleman would work perhaps from 9 to 5, and he would have access to everything he needed. Today, both have to work very hard, have PhDs, and still it's not enough. You still have to run and perfect yourself, and the market is ever more competing. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Have to be competing just to exist. You have to pay your mortgage throughout your life just to be in a house. So everything has become much more difficult. So Prabhupada was thinking how he could release his disciples of all these external burdens so they could actually be free to practice yoga, to study the Bhagavatam, and to enlighten one another and the society at large. And to do that, he needed an economical model which would sustain everyone in a natural way. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Now we're going to shift to Lord Brahma. Much later, you know, here in second canto, right in the 10th canto, Lord Brahma is going to have one of his moments. And that moment is when he looks at Krishna. He has just killed the demon Agasura. And he says, "Who is this little boy?" He could not understand that that little boy was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what did he do in his ingenious mind? He says, while Krishna goes to look for a calf, still with some little morsel of prasadam in his hand, he says, you have fun, cowherd boys. I'm going to take care of this. So Lord Brahma comes and he steals everyone to check Krishna. So Krishna is looking here and there about this. And then Krishna realizes, aha, Lord Brahma is trying to trick me. He's trying to test me. So what does he do? Anybody read this pastime? Yes, how did he expand himself? I mean, what did he do?
The two types of expansion. One is going to Balaram, one is his own personal expansion. Mm-hmm. So he expanded as himself, but took the shapes of calves and cowherd boys.
Exactly. So, when those cowherd boys and those calves got home, the attraction of the cows for their calves were greater than the attraction for Krishna because Krishna was the calf. So the whole Vraj was inundated by this love of God because they were very connected to the Supreme Person. And that took 1 year. That took 1 year. And Brahma was under illusion because he could not understand that this boy in Vraj is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this brings us to a verse which you have all heard, which we offer frequently when we do a yagya. You remember? Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Yagat Ditaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. So what is this verse saying to us? That Krishna, He is the giver of pleasure for the senses and the cows. Isn't it? He is the worshipful. I'll read the translation, which is really nice. Let me offer my respectful obeisance unto Lord Krishna, who is the worshipful deity for all Brahminical men, who is the well-wisher of cows and Brahmanas, and is always benefiting the whole world. I offer my repeated obeisances to the personality of Godhead, known as Krishna and Govinda. So we constantly recite this mantra at every function that we do. We should even do before, as we are offering prasadam, ringing the bell. And Brahma, for that moment, not recognizing Krishna, the Bhagavatam is showing us how to know Krishna and to love Krishna really depends on the mercy of a pure devotee, of a Vaishnava. At that point, Brahma was the creator, so he was feeling very big. I am the creator. So he had actually lost track. And we can also become like that. We can get engrossed in our own thinking, I know everything. And humility is the mood of the parampara. Humility is where the channel of knowledge flows. If you analyze the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they're always humble because that's the mood of our parampara. Trinadapi is the mood of the parampara. That's how the knowledge flows down. So Brahma had lost track of that and he could not understand that point. And Krishna, in the Vraj mood, He's teaching us so many aspects. Through this verse, He's telling us that the Brahminical culture cannot be sustained without the cows. There's no Brahminical culture without the cows. And one may ask, but why not? The Brahmins are so independent. They could live anywhere. But the cows, they have a special position in the universe. They were granted the benediction of being the nourishers of yagya. The cows into the chakra of yagyas, they supply the ingredients for us to transcend the world through yagya. And the whole Brahminical culture depends on that culture itself. So the position of the cows is central to the spiritual world and is central to the Brahminical culture. And how is that? Because the cows, actually, they are a matrix of abundance. And we talk about this on Sunday. The matrix of abundance of the universe. There are two matrices of abundance in the universe. Of course, yagya is the cause, but there are two matrix. The matrix is the cow, who has 30 plus million demigods in their body, and Lakshmi Devi is their own dung. And from the dung, you can see what was experienced in India when the British people arrived there. And the other matrix is the forest. The forest by itself regenerates itself and produces all kinds of vegetation and fruits and wood and herbs and medicine. Everything is generated in the forest. So the forest is a self-sufficient unit who can generate life. And the cows is the other matrix which can generate abundance through yagya and through nutrition and through fertility and through so many aspects in life. In the Gaura Purnima, I did something quite special in Mayapur. We were in Mayapur and I decided to go on a bullock ride cart from Mayapur to Jagannath Mandir. When thousands of pilgrims. Mayapur was so full of people, you know, you couldn't even move properly in many places. The temple was, if you were able to have the darshan of the deities, you were a superhero. Somehow, by mystical power, you became very thin or you floated or something and you could see the deities. So I decided to go on a bullet ride cart. And I invited three couples, along with my wife and myself, and these four couples are riding on a Rolls Royce. The bullock cart of two Concrete bulls. Concrete bulls are bulls that have these very big horns. They're outstanding, beautiful. And they were riding, and the pilgrims were looking at us with a face, I cannot relate to you. Their faces looking at the bulls and saying, what? And some were smiling, some people taking photos, some people. They wanted to know what this is, because the Concrete bulls is so beautiful. As they walked, their horns were shifting and moving with their bodies, and they're pulling this cart. Very soon, we left the crowds, and we entered into the mist of Mayapur, the early morning mist. And you start to meditate on the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, running here, running there, chanting the holy name with his associates in Harinam, or as a child. Immediately, those pastimes start to enter your mind. And we decided, we are going to chant the holy names without speaking. We're just going to experience the holy names in Gauraponim, in the holy dham, on a bullock cart. So we decided to chant the holy names. And I have never experienced such a conducive vibration to chant the holy name as to chant the holy names on a bullock cart. Something on the speed, on the trepidation, just made the holy names perfect. Everybody was deeply going to the holy names and start to meditate in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gauranga, and we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
We're not sleepy, we're really chanting. And we could understand that as you go deeper, there is something magical about the bulls because they are Dharma personified, who was helping us. So that was a transcendental aspect. The other aspect was that I was sitting on that cart with so many responsibilities, thinking about India, thinking about the Bhaktivedanta Manar Gaushala, thinking about the UK Yatra, thinking about what are you going to do to help all these Yatras to promote this aspect. But by the time I finished the ride, I was so relaxed, as if I had had a sauna and a long massage. And I was so peaceful and completely happy. It was an amazing experience. I again felt human. Because the speed of the bulls is the speed of your walk. So if your mind is running, you can get down, but the maximum you can do is walk parallel to the bulls. So there's no point in running away. So you have to stay. And when you stay gradually, you start to say, I can leave my mind and I can let it be in its own pace. And you'll be surprised to see how we are affected by social media. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ji Ki. Hare Krishna. We were just amazed to see how our minds are affected by these, which you can't even imagine. It's so subtle, you cannot even imagine. You can only imagine when you lose it, and you're thinking, where is my phone? It's almost like your life, your prana, your contacts, your identity, everything is lost, isn't it? Your Instagram account, my God, what's going to do with my life now? It's become that deep. But at that time, that was secondary. We were just present there. So I could realize that, how important the experience is for us in our cult of bhakti. There's much to say. The time is limited about this. I hope we get more chances, but I wanted to say something more. There's a special verse, which I'm not going to tell now, but I'm going to make a propaganda for you. Please check the verse, Canto 10, Chapter 15, verse number 2. That's my homework for you. And see what Krishna says about the forest and about nourishment. And that enigma, how nourishment and the forest and the cows are connected, will try to put the first little light on Sunday. I will end, because I like to have some interaction with you, with a letter that Prabhupada wrote to one of his disciples, I think it's Rupanuga, in 74. And he says this, "Our farm projects are an extremely important part of our movement." He did not say it's a decorative part. He did not say it's an accessory part. It's an extremely important part of our movement. Look what he says next. We must. He doesn't say we should, we could, we might, we ought. He says we must become self-sufficient by growing our own grains and producing our own milk. Then there will be no question of poverty. Now Prabhupada is connecting this with abundance. So, now he's concluding his instruction. Develop these farm communities as far as possible. I could read more, but I would like to save time for the interaction. Yes, we have a question at the back. We have a microphone. Yes.
The cows, they're in the rasa of Santa, isn't it? This brings the question to mind that they're also in Vrindavan. So you have all the rasas there in Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was said the other day about how Maharaj Parchi is also Santa Ras.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't quite relate, because he said that actually that he apparently just went to the Vaikunthas after. Can you explain that? I'm trying to see how one gets to Goloka Vrindavan and the other one doesn't, having heard the whole Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, that he doesn't get to Goloka Vrindavan. Can you?
Yeah. Thank you for your question. It's a beautiful question. And the question, there is a passage in the Bhagavatam which helps us to shed on that, light on that. Bhishma Deva, he is on the bed of arrows, and he is describing to Krishna the perfection. And one of his tasks is to describe what is Dharma. He says the most difficult thing to ascertain is Dharma. But at one point he says, when he's going to talk about the gopis, he says, but that's a realm which I don't dwell, so let it be. So the Beatles were not the first one to get the phrase, right? It's just from Vishnadev, so it says, let it be. And the purport says that Vishnadev is a Vaikuntha man. So what I've heard is, when the cup is full, it's full. If your nature is Vaikuntha, you're full in Vaikuntha. If your nature is full in Shantaras, you're full in Shantaras. About your question about related to the cows and their rasas, I've heard two different explanations. The first one is exactly what you said. They're mostly in Shanta Rasa, and they're part of the scenario for Krishna. But I also heard in another class that some of them have a friendship relationship with Krishna. Krishna enjoys a friendship relationship with them, with cows and bulls. With all their names, and he goes and he plays the flute, and they come, and he reciprocates specifically with a specific cow. So, this is a deep question. Maybe someone else here who is a deep scholar would have a better answer than... Yes?
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the cows are in Vatsalya, which makes a lot of sense because they're given milk. So, There seems to be many answers.
So a deep study is called, let's study in which rasas are the cows. And we say cows, we put them in a category. But they're individuals, so that might be different individuals for different situations. Just like Mother Yashoda, she had one special cow to give a special milk for Krishna, so he would stop stealing, because she did not like Krishna stealing so much. So she got the best cow, best milk, to make the best makana. So there's also a distinction there. And there are distinctions. Yes, Prabhu.
Literally the term vatsalya, which represents like motherly or parenting kind of affection, literally means cow. It means like having a relationship as a mother cow for a child cow. So this itself, Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur explains that there's these fluctuations of rasas, even as you mentioned, amongst variety of inhabitants of Vrindavan and Goloka Vrindavan. So we perceive it as shanta, but one of the explanations was that the mother cows, they have so much affection for Krishna that their sole desire was to have Krishna as a child. So one of these pastimes of Brahma Vimohan Leela is that Krishna manifests as the cows to satisfy. So that in itself indicates that they haven't been in neutrality, they haven't been in a shantaras, but rather they have motherly affection. And same thing with the other parents, inhabitants of Vrindavan, they also have this affection for Krishna, so that's how he manifests. They're not solely, we can't make a statement that if they're only in shantaras, that would be kind of a narrow
statement. It would be similar to saying that everyone with a human form or a two-armed form are in one specific rasa. Then all different rasas, right? We can see the gopis glorifying the grass of Vrindavan, who is in the shantarasa mode, because they're so fortunate, because Krishna will put his lotus feet on them. And they ask, what austerities have this grass done to have the lotus feet of Krishna on their head? Because in the spiritual world, everything is conscientious and everyone is self-realized. So there's no question of hierarchy. You know, it's a question of reciprocation. That's the most important, the relational aspect with Krishna. Yes, Shama Sundar Prabhu. Yes, please.
In your example about the importance of the cows, you're mentioning the importance of ghee and sacrifice. Today it seems like a historical relevance. In the past they did yagyas. Today we do Harinam Sankirtan. So it doesn't seem like a strong argument anymore, because we don't do yagyas that way. In fact, we're often thinking, should we be doing them at all? Is this just ritual? So it doesn't seem like a very strong argument to get cow protected today by the fact geese is related to yagya.
Thank you for that. That's a beautiful question. And that question has been raised again and again. With the idea that actually we do Harinam, we don't need so much the culture or the Vanashram culture or cow protection as such. They're historical elements which belong to another era. Now in the modern age, what's important is the transcendental knowledge. But the first question which comes back is, how do you eat? What do you eat? If that's not important, what's the quality of your food? Can you eat just anything? Any industrial food, is that the same as eating organic food? Does a Sankirtan devotee who does Harinam Sankirtan, where does he live? Is it all okay to live in a dungeon or to live in a nice place? Does it make an impact on your consciousness? So the answer to that is that some elements in nature have a certain impact on our consciousness. And one of them is milk. Prabhupada again and again expresses the idea that milk nurtures the finer tissues of the brain. So that's an element of Brahminical culture, to elevate, to put you in the mode of goodness. And that has been greatly disenfranchised when we think of today's reality of the cruelty with the cows and the industry. We tend to not want to get involved in that industry, we tend to get away from it. But you can't get away from the fact that milk carries a potency of enriching the finer tissues of the brain. And that's required in the Brahminical culture, intelligent people. So unless we do protect, and the other point is ghee itself has some medicinal properties which cannot be easily exchanged. Actually, the taste, the medicinal aspect of ghee was so widely emphasized in the Vedic culture that people used to live 100 years easily because they were regulated, they had pure food, and they were pious people in the sense that their habits were habits conducive to self-realization. Today, within the world we are, the social media world, with 1 trillion waves going through here, electronic waves, magnetic waves, we don't even know what's happening to our chakras and, you know, our subtle bodies. It's just being bombarded, you know, every single direction. So my answer to that is Harinam Sankirtan, the word Sankirtan means together, it also means it's only complete with everything else. This one of the translations of Sankirtan, it's done when it's done in the whole, as a complete yagya. Sankirtan as a complete yagya. So in our first attempt of our mission, we heard emphatically that all we have to do is to distribute the books, to go on the streets, chant the holy names, and indeed we have become known as the happy monks, the happy Krishnas who chant on the streets, who are always seen like that. But maybe in the future we'll be seen also by a class of people who take care of cows, who have a life in the mode of goodness, and offer solutions to the ecology of the planet by our lifestyle. So ghee, milk, cow protection, self-sufficient communities. I've just touched on it, but on Sunday we can go a little deeper how Dharma is directly affected by that. And without Dharma, it's very hard to sustain anything. Dharma means sustenance. So that's another point. We have 1 minute and we have one question. It's your. Or comment or correction.
Hare Krishna, just a question. In the verse, we can see kind of a connection where Narada Muni is saying that the amount of tapasya you perform is to a certain degree like equal to the amount of creation you perform. So my question is for us as devotees, what is the significance for us to perform tapasya? And let's say if in a certain stage of your life, you come to a point where the four regulative principles are not a tapasya anymore. So what kind of a form should we perform as devotees, practicing devotees? And what if, again, the tapasya becomes it's a lifestyle, a natural thing? Because for someone is a tapasya, for someone is a pleasure.
Thank you for a beautiful question. It's very common as we become more practiced in bhakti, we start assuming that because I wake at 1, I'm the most advanced devotee. We just become accustomed to that. The advancement is not connected to the external tapasya, it's connected to the elevation of your consciousness. So when your consciousness is all about serving Krishna, giving Krishna every day, then your consciousness is going up. That's one of the indexes. So for a practitioner of bhakti yoga, like Narada Muni here, he's observing, he's very observant, he's aware, because he's interested to have parameters, how he can improve. And here he's doubting if his spiritual master is God himself or not, and he wants clarification. And that's for the benefit of all of us. So I just brought the aspect of Brahma being bewildered to show that sometimes even personalities like Brahma and Shiva get bewildered. And in the case of Brahma, he got bewildered with Krishna. He could not recognize him in his form as a cowherd boy. Is that all right? So end here, on time, the British ending. I'd like to thank all of you for your patience, and Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi, Hare Bol.